Get ready for a week-long celebration of music, community, and fabulous fun with Joy Radiothon 2024. Joy has the largest collection of rainbow podcast content in the world, and you can help keep us out loud and proud by donating during Joy Radiothon 2024. Just go to joy.org.au/radiothon. Mark it in your calendars because Joy Radiothon returns June 1st to 7th. And remember, we all flourish with joy.
Bored of too many ads and dull, meaningless chat? We've got neither. Joy Drive, smart, fun radio.
Mobile phones are banned in all Australian state schools and many Catholic and independent schools. It's part of a global trend to restrict phone use in schools across the world. Well, does the ban deliver any benefits? According to a new study on a smartphone ban in Norway's schools, the benefits are quite dramatic.
Gender, sexuality, and pop culture. There isn't much Lauren Rosewarne doesn't know, and if she doesn't, we'll make it up.
Lauren Rosewarne, good afternoon.
Hello, Warren. Thanks for having me.
What do you do when a student in your lectures uses a mobile phone? Are they allowed to?
No, they're not. Well, it's not that they're not allowed to. I haven't encountered this as a problem where they've done it. Usually it's talking amongst themselves and I'll tell them to leave the lecture theatre, because it's the acoustics in those venues mean that even if it's two people chatting sort of six rows back, it bounces around at the front and it's hard to concentrate. But they're on their phones. They may not be talking on them, but they're certainly playing with them. And again, there are so many reasons why banning them, talking on them is not okay, but they're certainly not allowed to be banned. And there's lots of reasons for that, including some of them, for example, are using them to take notes, to record so they can later go back and refresh their memory on content. Some of them, for example, are using translation apps live in the theatre. So there's lots of reasons as to why at a university it would be very difficult to have those bans. I've worked at universities in the US that do have no screen policies where you can't even bring a laptop into the room. I don't think this would work at the university I work at. It didn't even work well at the universities where it was a policy in the US. I think I can certainly see reasons that I'd like it to be completely banned because of concentration stuff. But equally, I'm the person who, if I had a choice, would be using a device. It's not that I'm not paying attention. I like to multitask.
Tell us about the study in Norway. What did it find?
Yeah, so the study in Norway is a little different to previous research on this, because first, in Australian schools, mobile and schools I'm talking about, primary and secondary, mostly public, but some independent as well, their phones have been banned mostly for nearly 10 years here. So the research is a bit mixed around the world in terms of whether it's, you know, amazing or whether it's just okay. The study that's come out of Norway says the benefits are disproportionately to girls. So girls are experiencing less bullying, they're going to doctors, be it GPs or psychologists, less, and they're having improvements in classroom or test performance. The results for boys didn't really seem, they had less bullying, but there was no improvement for them in terms of mental health and no improvements for them for academic performance.
Can students just access things like social media, etc., on their laptops? I mean, do you have to have a phone to do that?
So it depends on what type of blocks that the university the schools have. So for example, certain libraries will have social media blocks where you can't access Facebook. So again, for, you know, some places will have adult content bans. And I think I'm happy for a teacher to ring in and correct me, but I suspect that's the easiest way to have kids not on social media, with simply having bans on Instagram, bans on Facebook. And you can do that at a server level because they'd all be using Wi-Fi if they're not on their own devices using, say, 5G.
Now, this study was in Norway. Can we extrapolate those results and say, okay, it's probably having a similar effect here? Is their school system sort of similar in some ways?
The gender stuff, I think, is quite similar. So I've done research in this area as well. And if you look at girls around about the onset of adolescence, girls anyway have spikes in mental health issues and depression. Now, there's hormonal explanations for that. But this seems to, social media seems to make that stuff worse. So you can see that girls limiting their tech use, at least not in the classroom. So what, 6 to 8 hours a day not having this stuff means that they're not having as much of this content and therefore they're seeing more improvements in their well-being. That stuff is not as pronounced for boys. The other big factor, Warren, is how boys bully compared to girls. Boys bully physically. So tech doesn't matter to that. Girls get bullied and bully using social media. So taking that tool away, yes, if they want to bully or unfortunately get bullied, it can still happen after class, but at least you're removing 6 to 8 hours of that happening during the day. And that's why it's more pronounced for girls as well, because that's a big tool. Girls tend to, and there's lots of years of research that supports this, the way girls bully each other is more, is less physical, and it's always utilized whatever technology is available. And at the moment, it's social media.
We're chatting with Associate Professor Lauren Rosewarne from the University of Melbourne about the benefits that a ban on smartphones in schools brought to Norwegian students. Lauren, are the phones also banned at lunchtime and recess? Is it the entire school day that they've been banned?
And this is depending on school to school. And this is part of the downsides of these policies and why some of the studies on them say they don't work as well as you hope. So some schools will say, yep, lock them up all day. Don't even bring them, basically. Others will say, we'll get them out of the cupboards for you during the breaks, etc. This is all very hard to implement. Years ago, I went to a comedy show in Melbourne and we were all forced to lock up our phones. It was a pain, right? It was a lot of infrastructure, a lot of basically coat check, but for every single person in the theatre, because everyone has a phone now. And trying to do this multiple times a day at school is chaotic. So you could say, well, school kids could lock them up themselves. Again, that's a trust system. So there's lots of elements here that are adding bureaucracy to it. And that, again, you could say, well, kids shouldn't bring them at all. But then sometimes the kids need them for, you know, arranging transportation home and things like that. So it's not that easy to just say ban them outright. But when you limit them, there is infrastructure that's needed to make this ban happen. You could use blocking, which has happened at certain theatres where you don't actually get a signal at all, but that has other consequences, for example, security.
Oh, and also, what if you're on call? Like, you know, you're a doctor or something and you're on call, but, hey, I'm just going to watch a show. I mean,
absolutely. And in a school, kids have, you know, again, the someone in that room has to have contact with the outside world. This is obviously a very pronounced issue in the United States because of school security issues, and is part of the reason why very few schools there do have these kind of bans, because parents in the US are more aggressive regarding parental rights, and they do not want their kid in a classroom without a phone in case of a school shooter situation. That's a very American problem. That's not, fortunately, not something that's concerning parents around the rest of the world, certainly not in Australia.
Let's, putting the bullying aside just for a second, what impact does having a mobile phone at school have, I suppose, on the learning ability?
Yeah, so the big factor is distraction. Right. Now, we know, because adults have this as well, in the sense that they estimate it's about 15 minutes, where if we play with our phone, it takes us about 15 minutes to get back into whatever other activity we're doing. Now, that's for adults, generally people who had a life before social media and after. This is not the case for kids who this is their life. They've never known a world without internet access. That disruption factor, it's a little bit, it's hard to determine, in the sense that, is this something that some kids are just better at and more resilient than others? But again, adults have skills in terms of learning how to get back to tasks and forcing themselves to be disciplined and impulse control. Kids are still learning that, and the tool becomes a very addictive distraction. And that's why the argument is you can't tell kids to self-restrict. You have to have policies that dictate it.
Lauren, I, you know, as you know, I walk my dog every day at the dog park, and I chat to people. I mean, people at dog parks chat, but I don't. This is just completely anecdotal, but I've noticed, I don't know, over the years, a decrease in the some of the conversations. You know, they're not as spontaneous as they used to be, or they don't last as long, or people are pulling their dogs away and things like that. And that's anecdotal. And I'm just wondering, what impact have mobile phones had on our ability to hold conversations?
This is hard to answer because sometimes people will say, for example, on public transport, that people are always now in their mobile phones and not interacting with those around them. Then you look at old photos from the 40s and 50s of people on public transport and they're all reading newspapers.
They're all holding black phones up on the wall.
So that idea of whether there was some sort of past where we were all much more connected, again, the evidence is a bit mixed for that, but certainly and you and I have spoken about, for example, speaking on the phone anxiety that young people are disproportionately reporting in surveys where they have high level, Generation Z has high level anxiety about speaking on the phone. Wow. So I think that if to answer your question, if you stretch that out, I think, yeah, there is some level of social anxiety that has increased over time. Now, can we connect that to the technology or have other things happened in the last few years that have skilled people in that regard?
I love talking on the phone. Look out.
Do you?
I might call you. I just find I prefer to pick up the phone and just have a quick conversation. I find it much easier. It just removes a lot of that ambiguity that can sometimes be misread. I don't know. I love it. Maybe
really the ambiguity part, that's partly why I guess I'm thinking in a professional context, I want a paper trail.
Oh, okay, right.
Friends, I don't feel that way, obviously, because I don't need to say, well, hang on, remember when you said at 5 o'clock on. But certainly in a professional context, I'd really rather. I always actually find it quite strange when students just pick up the phone and ring me because I feel like whatever you're doing, you're not wanting to put in writing, which feels a little bit dodgy.
When I ring you and I hear the recording beeps in the background,
that's
I'll
right.
know that you're recording it. Just on the bullying side, because I find that really concerning, has it, and I know you mentioned that in particular the bullying is not happening at school, but it still happens outside of school. Has there been any studies done or is there any data in this particular study in Norway that shows that maybe the bullying has softened or decreased a little bit after hours as well?
Oh, okay. So the bullying is looked at overall as opposed to just in school. And yes, they absolutely had a decline. So I think we could probably say there is a benefit of actually not having kids spending so much time, you know, normalizing the bullying during school days. Mm. And perhaps it does, you know, you're kind of breaking that cycle of normalizing the bullying. I think that's potentially something that can be read into this. It's not clear from what I've read from this study or from other studies. And I do, cyberbullying is still actually a really serious problem for schools, as is new technology bullying that we've seen at other recent news scandals as related to deepfake pornography, where kids are putting the heads of their schoolmates onto the bodies, in an AI sense, onto the bodies of porn stars, basically, and creating highly sexual images of classmates and circulating those. That is this problem with, how long it takes for these bans and these restrictions to catch up with the kind of ways that kids are already bullying each other. And I should say, it's not just kids who do that. Adults also do this kind of thing as well.
With the development of AI, and I suppose, you know, we've got Elon Musk's implants that go into the brain, Neuralink, do you reckon we'll just turn into smartphones eventually?
Oh, hypothetically.
You know, I can just think dial Lauren.
Probably not you and I, Warren. It might be a few years away for that. But you do see, and it's been sort of 10 odd years where people have been talking about getting, for example, the chips from their credit cards implanted into their hands to make things easier, etc.
Just get a watch.
Yeah, I was just about to say, just get a smart. You've got a smartphone anyway. Mm. You can use Apple Pay or Google Pay. You don't have to have the things inside your body. It feels a little bit excessive, but then there'll always be people, they call them the early adopters, who will want to be at the forefront of all this kind of, you know, human cyber fusion. Then the rest of us will say, I don't want other more plastics in my bloodstream.
Oh, I'd be trying to find it. You know, where's that square bit under my skin?
Run the metal detector over me. I need to know where it is. Has it shifted?
Lauren, good to chat with you. It's a really important topic. Thanks for joining us
on
Drive.
Talk to you next week.
Talk to you next week. That's Associate Professor Lauren Rosebourne from the University of Melbourne.
Joy Drive on Joy 94.9 FM in Melbourne. Joy on your digital radio, iHeartRadio, TuneIn.com or the Joy app. No matter where you are.
This podcast was produced by Joy Media. You can support Joy's diverse sound and diverse community this June by donating to Joy Radiothon 2024. Go to joy.org.au/radiothon. And remember, we all flourish with Joy.